Good morning. Today is Thursday, December the 17th. Joining us this morning from his workstation, Fred Van Fleck. Good morning.
Good morning. Sitting here watching the sun trying to peek through the clouds after a nice big rain yesterday.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Oh.
Yeah, happy to be here. I love to see the sun. It's great.
Yeah, sure. Okay, fine. You don't have a burn today, do you? Okay, Winston, why do we say it?
Oh, okay, this is one I actually tried having done on Monday, but something else was chosen. Where did we get the term ventriloquism as a name for throwing the voice?
Okay, Fred, it's all yours.
Well, I'm sure it has something to do with... I have no idea.
Yeah, it has something to do with Edgar Bergen. How's that?
Yeah, I, yes. Yeah, all I can tell you is we watched Jeff Dunham's Christmas show.
Yeah.
That man is one amazing ventriloquist.
Yeah, you know, I would have loved to have seen Edgar Bergen. We see him on TV too, but just to see, you know, as somebody who really set the stage for the entire industry. Okay, Winston.
Yeah.
Tell us how wrong we are.
It comes from the Latin and literally means to speak from the belly. The Romans thought that ventriloquists spoke by using the air in their stomachs. And for all we know, we might not actually have a guest. It could be just Brian just throwing his voice and pretending to be Fred.
Oh, I could do better. I could get closer than this.
You know, I was going to say, Brian, I was actually pretty close. I was just a hair off.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. Yeah. Just one of those
I knew it in my gut. It only gets worse.
Yeah. Well, that presumes it got better. Oh, gee. So here we are. What's the current latest update from either the state or from your board about what January looks like, because things certainly have changed since last we spoke.
Yeah, wow. Life is just crazy. I think yesterday was the single biggest day in the United States of COVID infections. So it's continuing to just spiral right now as a country and as a state. I still feel fortunate up here on the North Coast because I don't believe we are anywhere near our ICU capacity at this point, but there's other places in California that certainly are overflowing their capacity, and so again, still feel fortunate to be up here. But if you look on the school front, we all year long have had students on our site up until the 2 weeks following Thanksgiving and into this week, where the board decided that it was best to take a break to shield us from the travel. And so we're scheduled to start school back up on Tuesday, January 19th. Following the holiday on Monday the 18th, and for the high school, still scheduled to start up on Monday, January 25th, I believe it is. And that's going to be affirmed by the board, assumably affirmed, but it could be changed, on a special meeting on the afternoon of January 7th, that's the Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. And so the conversation is really going to be around how are we moving forward. And I think it's going to really play into what it looks like over Christmas. And so what our plans are to actually reach out to those folks that chose to do in-person instruction, because remember, we were having our TK through 6 students back in for in-person instruction. And we're going to survey those folks. That was about 60% of our students who chose to do the in-person piece. We're going to survey those folks and then determine whether or not we are going to start back up. And so it'll be interesting to see how they feel, if they want to come back for that in-person instruction or not.
It's intriguing that there's that kind of level of interest. And I'm curious, did you talk to when you were doing the surveying or having the survey done, did you talk to the kids also? I wonder what that number would have been.
So very interesting. So two things I'll say. So we are actually going to do the survey of those parents on the Monday before that meeting of January 7th. And the reason is we want to have as fresh a data as possible for those folks. So they work through the Christmas break and everything. And so can really help the board make a decision. Now, when we were doing our original surveying, we did survey students at Eureka High School, and we reached out to them because we felt like that they had old enough to have an important opinion and be a piece of the conversation. And believe it or not, the students closely mirrored where their parents were at, and it was about 50% of the students who really wanted at the high school to come back to in person. I think that that number is going to slip. So, for instance, in our K-6, about 60% of our families returned to in-person instruction because we gave that choice. And if I was a betting person, I bet you about half those folks now, because we have a lot of people who are pretty concerned about this again, about half those folks now are going to say, we're not ready to come back to in-person.
Huh, that's it. It'll be interesting to see how that plays. I mean, it's not a surprise that the kids are mirroring their parents.
Right.
Okay. Right. You know, I mean, if you're going to be a rebel, it's not going to be about this. It's going to be about a six-pack of beer or something like that.
I was happy for a long time to be able to say we have had no secondary infections in our schools, and we actually had our first secondary infection of a staff member this week, meaning that we had a staff member come in who was positive, and another staff member on that same site was traced back to be positive. So it's out there. This is, I think, what's different for everybody this time. Before, you kind of knew somebody who had COVID, and I think pretty much everybody out there now knows somebody who has or has had COVID. It's just a different world as far as where we're at. And so the controversy now and what's happening in Sacramento, there's two major things happening in Sacramento. One of those is AB 10, Assembly Bill 10, talking about a mandatory start date for schools, and I can talk about that. The other one is a conversation, and I'm a huge proponent of this one, about having summer school and going back to the old, robust summer school program and getting our kids back for in-person instruction early so we can work on fixing that learning gap that's happened during this distance learning.
We'll talk about that when we come back. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, before the break, you were talking about some potential legislation that would have impact on start dates, the way that education would be addressing some of the challenges over the next 6 to 9 months. So I guess maybe start at the top of your list there, and we can spend a little bit more time in detail. You said the mandatory start date. When I heard that, what I was thinking is that then the local school boards would lose their authority to make the determination in the local area. Is that accurate, or is there something else there?
Nope, that is accurate. And so the premise behind AB 10 is, well, first off, it's emergency legislation, so it will take a 2/3 vote since they've made it emergency legislation to pass. It's been met with quite a bit of controversy, but what the bill really says is, as of March 1st, if your county moves from purple to a lower tier, you are required to offer some sort of in-person instruction. So it's a choice. You're required to offer some sort of in-person instruction for students within 2 weeks. Now, the premise behind this bill is some of our legislators in Sacramento were upset with the authority that the governor has taken. They feel that he has overstepped his bounds by saying in the purple that schools can't open and that there's too much choice amongst the local school districts, where the vast majority of schools across the state of California are shut down to in-person instruction. and they want to create a pathway for schools to open, and that's the general premise behind it. There's a lot of pushback on this bill right now, namely from folks like California Teachers Association, who wrote a letter staunchly opposing this bill because they think that it is putting teachers' lives in unnecessary danger. So if this one's going to get the two-thirds vote, I don't know at this point, but I think it may struggle to go through. What we plan on doing on a local level here, and in fact, what I plan on making a recommendation to our board is, okay, board, my recommendation is that we identify our opening with a color. And as long as I can get the board to agree with me on that, then the conversation becomes, what color does our county need to be and for how long before we reengage the opening process of our schools?
Well, an open is different than mandatory, right?
Yes, absolutely. Open is a choice right now. And I don't think mandatory in-person instruction is coming back until next fall. I can't see a pathway that that's going to happen until the vaccine is pretty widely available. And then you add on the next level of that, there is no vaccine yet for folks who are under the age of 18. And so our students will be likely coming back next fall not vaccinated, but the staff will be likely vaccinated, at least those who choose to do it, because it won't be mandatory.
Right. Now, you mentioned summer school also, and I would suspect that that's not a virtual summer school. That's some form of outside running around and inside the classroom summer school for the younger ages, and then for the high school, something akin to what you had last month?
Those of us that are older in the county, I hate to put myself in that category, but I remember a time when we were young and summer school is always happening. I mean, in elementary school, there's summer school every summer that was offered for me. And then in the high school, I remember taking additional classes. In fact, I took driver's ed at Arcata High School, and it was enrichment to move ahead. And actually, namely for me, I wanted my driver's license when I turned 16. But anyways, that almost 100% disappeared in the Great Recession of 2008. And so we have not had an enrichment summer school at the high school since before 2008. We've had remediation summer school, but not enrichment. And we haven't had elementary summer school since even before that. And that's simply because it hasn't been funded through the state. And so I've already started my advocacy for some funding to have some enrichment summer school, meaning that it'll be for all students who want to do summer school as opposed to just making up. And it'll be for all grade levels. I think it's going to be imperative that we get our students back in, because my goal is that we don't have a generation defined by COVID. And if we don't do some mitigation into this learning loss, we're going to have a generation defined by COVID. We have so many students who are behind because the distance learning just isn't working for them. We have a robust program where, from my perspective, as far as distance learning goes, our teachers are knocking it out of the park. They're working their tail off. But if you say in-person learning is a 10, you know, our distance learning program right now is probably a 6. And even in its best case is a 6, because you just can't have that same interaction that you can have in person.
Well, and at that age, it's not as if the collegiate model works, which I think is probably pretty much what you're talking about that has been implemented. You know, there are just those that need more TLC and more accountability.
I'll tell you, the collegiate model isn't working either. I have two children, one in Chico State and one in UC Santa Barbara, and they're doing online classes right now, and they're horrible. No offense to the teachers that are out there, but the college professors that are out there aren't geared to teach online learning. They're in the same situation that K-12 schools are. Maybe some of the online platform schools that have traditionally and always been online, but not John Q Instructor. They're just not geared to do it, and they're having to reinvent their curriculum.
So you're saying University of Phoenix and then Southern New Hampshire, huh?
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Superintendent of Schools, Fred Van Fleck. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Fred, there was an interesting program this morning from the folks that do the Rudy Maxa travel show, and they said that there's this new phenomenon called schoolcation. Have you heard of that?
I have not, I am assuming what. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is like resorts and some of the hotels and destination places where they are set up so that there's an area set aside for the kids to do their school, you know, virtually wherever they are, because they can be wherever you want them to be. But then during the off hours or during the PE times or the physical stuff or things of that nature, then they've got those areas. One particular one was a water park. So for the PE hour or whatever it was, they could go outside and get on the water slides and do that and then come back in refocused. And I thought, you know, that's kind of a novel concept, and it certainly allows some of these facilities to continue to operate. I'm not sure if the governor of California would permit that here, but it seemed like that almost had a pretty good modicum of sense. Any thoughts?
Well, short of the travel order that we have from the Humboldt County Public Health, I think it's unique. But the problem is, it's only those families who can afford to do it that do it. We have to keep in mind what our population looks like here in Eureka. 70% population lives below the poverty line. And that's not even in the cards for them to do. We've handed out 3,500 Chromebooks, computers for our students to learn to get them connected. And so the reality, unfortunately, for our students is they're more concerned about where their next meal is coming from, more so than where they're going to go on vacation. Now, all that aside, for those families who can afford to go do it, we have families that are doing it. That's absolutely happening out there. Where families are going down. I think about even my own family. Late last fall, I took a day off of work on Friday, and we left on a Thursday, went down to my mother-in-law. That was back when we were in Yellow County, just for the record. Went down there, and my kids did their virtual learning from a different location. And that's one of the beauties of learning this virtual piece is it's really made it possible to go out there and experience other things. And there's going to be some hangover that's positive from the virtual learning, meaning because parents all the time take their children out to go on vacation or to go to work someplace that's out of the area or something like that. And I think the potential might be there in the future, as opposed to getting a packet of 5,000 worksheets to complete while you're gone. That there may be a potential that you can tune into the classroom, because there may be a camera inside the classroom where you can tune into the instruction that was happening inside the classroom, even though you're off in the Caribbean or wherever it is that you might be. And so there's some positive that comes out of that. The other positive that comes out of it is, you know, I think back to the beginning of the pandemic here in Humboldt County when we shut down schools in March. I mean, I had done one or two virtual meetings. When I had a virtual meeting, I would, you know, get prepared and make sure I was ready in advance, and then I could log in with no issues. And now when you have a virtual meeting, man, you just show up right that second, because it's so second nature, no matter the platform the virtual meeting is in, to get in. You don't have to do that pre-planning. And so our ability to access virtual meetings and so forth has just tremendously increased. And even our ability to physically handle it, I don't know how much I like this, but we can go into hours of virtual meetings every day, where in the beginning of the pandemic, I was struggling to get through an hour-long virtual meeting. So life is just different for us, and we adapt. And that's really, you know, what we're good at doing is normalizing whatever situation we happen to be in.
I wonder if there was a perspective taken with some of the kids, whether they were on a vacation or not, that scouting, you know, go outside and find a blank. You know, if you're on a vacation, or let's say if you're in a different community, it may not be a vacation. It might be a business trip that, you know, the kids are going along with. Okay, do a little research. You know, history, political science, any of those types of things. Even, I suppose, some biology could be done also, or botany. You know, just some of the different things that you see in those areas, and report back to everybody else. I mean, I could see that this would be like a portable classroom, but an individualized portable classroom rather than some of the challenges that were there in the past. Is it going to change ADA and the funding that the schools have?
I don't think that that's going to change. I really don't. We're in hold harmless times right now, and that's a whole other interesting conversation we can talk about is what our enrollment did this year and what private school enrollment did. I've got numbers that I can share with that. But the interesting thing is if you think about student learning, and earlier I talked about the learning gap, traditionally the learning gap happens over the summer, and the learning gap starts in kindergarten and accelerates up through the third and fourth grade. And where the learning gap truly happens is not during school. It happens over the summertime when students are away from school. And what the difference is pretty much exactly what you're talking about. Some of our more affluent students are off vacationing and doing learning activities while they're on vacation, learning about all these different places. And so their learning doesn't stop, as opposed to some of our less fortunate families whose parents may or may not be working, but their summer consists of they're just at home and waiting for school to start back up, and they don't have those enrichment activities like you're talking about, and that really stifles their learning over the summer as compared to students who are out experiencing life and experiencing different things where they're learning continues.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, what about, you said 3,500 Chromebooks. Now, those things don't come cheap. Is the school district on the hook for paying for those? Are the kids now, is that something that is their property? Is it the school's property? What about that resource that's now in the hands of the students?
That was an interesting long discussion, and a long discussion with our board, because there's two things that really happened with the Chromebooks. And so, yes, the district's on the hook for the cost of those Chromebooks. But here's the interesting thing. We're not just on the hook for the cost of those Chromebooks one time, because we've really crossed a threshold, and we brought this discussion to the board level because it was important for them to chime into this, is, do we really want to be a one-to-one school district? And when I say one-to-one, I mean one-to-one computers to students. And even though we're there computer-wise with our students in order to get them connected when they're at home right now, when we come back to school, we have to make a conscious decision to go in that direction rather than it just happening by happenstance. And here's the interesting thing that a lot of people don't think about. If all of our students return to school tomorrow, they had their Chromebooks, and everybody logged on to their Chromebooks and turned them on, and teachers started doing instruction via online, they'd crash our network. Because the amount of Wi-Fi and the bandwidth that we have in the schools, even though we have the fastest and most robust bandwidth in the county, it's not enough to handle the number of students that we have all getting on the network at once. And so we have to make a conscious investment in the backbone of our network and the hardware and software, for that matter, to make that happen. And so we've had to completely redo our budget in the multi-year budget projections to account for technology and supplying that hardware to happen inside the school, since we decided to go one-on-one, and for the replacement of that hardware after these Chromebooks have aged out. Because the problem is, we're going to get addicted to this, and we're going to completely redo our curriculum based on a computer technology, meaning students will be accessing their instructional materials via the computer. And if we don't have a replacement plan for all these devices as we plan off into the future, it could be catastrophic for the district. And
now, so what about
budgeting and doing it correctly?
What about things like printers? Okay, if there's the need for tactile, or is that something that's passe? But also, as you look at the computers, there's, as you said, there's the replacement after these things start to age out. How is that being, are the cost savings being balanced off a little bit by not having to buy textbooks?
Yes and no, but it's not completely balanced out, because even though we're not buying textbooks per se for hard copies, we still have to buy the access to the online versions of the curriculum. And so it's not that much cheaper to have the online access than it is to have the actual textbook in hand, especially when you account for the price of the software and the price of the hardware to make it accessible. There is no savings in that. In fact, going to a one-to-one district is more expensive. And we're looking at close to $400,000 per year that we have to set aside just to maintain one-to-one. So, meaning we may not spend $400,000 next year per se on technology, but we have to bank that because we're going to have this cliff,
right,
where all these Chromebooks that we just bought are all going to brick at the same time. And so we have to be prepared and have our account built up for that.
Yeah, too much fun, dude. Thanks for coming by. Merry Christmas for you guys. Hopefully you'll be able to enjoy the meal together.
Oh, yeah. Same to you. Merry Christmas, everyone out there. And it's great talking to you.
All right, bud. Hang in there. Thanks. See everybody tomorrow.